Good afternoon. Thanks, Bobby. And so I was kind of tasked with the idea of rethinking our recommendation strategies and asking the question, are there benefits to a regional approach for soil test-based P&K recommendations? So I'm going to start with the answer. And the answer, of course, is yes. As long as everyone does what I want. Okay? And the I in this case is Antonio Mallarino. So the way I kind of took this on is I put on my striped whistler outfit and I went and started asking some consultants what our issues are. Does everybody know what a striped whistler is? I learned this at one of my favorite conferences. One of the fishing guides said that he had some striped whistlers as clients the week before I was there. And he's just going on and on. He said, what is a striped whistler? He said, well, a striped whistler is somebody from Iowa because they always wear those blue and white striped bib overalls. And every time you tell them the price of something, they go, whew. So my little undercover investigation of how people perceive us from a producer and consultant perspective is right now our recommendations lack flexibility. We have build-up and maintenance approaches. I hate to call them philosophies because I think it gives it too much credence. It's just kind of an approach. And we have a sufficiency level of approach. Unfortunately, most states only use one of those approaches. Dave in Kansas is about the only place that I know of that kind of emphatically makes a statement about a difference in approaches and that both are applicable. Iowa kind of has it embedded into their recommendations, but it's not really explicitly stated. The build-up and maintenance approach is really probably not ideal for rented land. It's also not ideal for potassium on coastal plain soils. You know, so there's a lot of places where the build-up and maintenance approach just simply is not that advantageous. And believe it or not, what the consultants told me is that producers, even on the land that they own, they are not looking to build their soil test levels anymore. Okay? By and large, they have much shorter turnaround time frames. They are looking for what's going to make me the most money next year or this year. They're not really looking at plowing a bunch of money into building and maintaining soil tests. And it's kind of shocking to me with the price of crops that we don't have the opposite situation going on, but that's what I was told. Okay. Something that goes along with our lack of flexibility is the prescriptive nature of our fertilizer recommendations. For example, I'm kind of from the build-up and maintenance kind of state, so I have a strong bias here, so I'm picking on my own philosophy. So why do we build at the critical level, okay, which in our case in Indiana for corn and soybeans would be 15 parts per million? But if we're at a high soil test level and we're trying to draw down our soil test level, we only draw it down to 30 parts per million. And in between there, we have the same fertilizer recommendation. Yet we'll argue about our critical levels. You know, is it 15 in Indiana or is it 20 in Iowa? I mean, we have all these arguments. Why do we specify a build time? In the tri-state region, it's 4 years. Why 4 years? And it kind of makes sense if you're in a corn-soybean rotation. You know, you go through two cycles, retest again. Hopefully, you're where you want to be. That doesn't necessarily fit with what producers' objectives are. And there's really little to no room to adjust for fluctuating prices if you kind of take a strict adherence to the build-up and maintenance approach. And this is even the same thing with sufficiency level, probably more so with that. And we have to remember that producers don't have unlimited pocketbooks. They have a certain budget, certain amount of money they can invest. Where should I invest it? What nutrients on what field? Okay, I think we've done a pretty poor job of adapting to these increased expectations. So then I kind of was thinking about, well, what are like my issues with all of us? Are we too wedded to our approaches? Many of us are the progeny of the people that developed the fertilizer recommendations in the first place. We were raised by those. We probably participated in the research that generated them. And so we kind of feel some ownership of them. And sometimes, we get a little bit too wedded to them, and we're not as open to looking at things from a new perspective. Should we have both build-up and sufficiency approaches, like Kansas does? My own personal feeling is that absolutely we should. We should have maybe a hybrid system. I think that those are things that we need to be considering. Problem is, do we have the data? Antonio Mallarino has lowered the relative landscape position of the whole state of Iowa from soil sampling, but for most of us, and even for him, we don't have the data that would address all of the systems that are used out there. Every farmer is unique. Every situation is unique. So we can't just do an experiment at 3 or 4 locations or 8 locations in a state, come up with recommendations, and say, here's your prescription. It just doesn't work that way. The other big thing, I decided that I would just look at the north central region and say, okay, at a given soil test level, what are our fertilizer recommendations for P and K? So I wanted to see what's so magical about our state borders. And this was pretty enlightening to me. So the blue values are the P205 recommendations. These are all in pounds per acre. I just felt like with this audience, I didn't want to go to the SI units. The red values are K2O recommendations. This is for 180 bushel per acre corn with a Bray P1 of 15 parts per million and ammonium acetate K or Maleic 3K of 100 parts per million. And if you look at our phosphorus recommendations up in North Dakota, we have a 30 pound per acre P205 recommendation. Now, as Dave Mengel was saying in the very first talk this morning, you're in North Dakota. You're a little bit farther out west, you have higher organic matter. When that organic matter mineralizes, you're probably getting a lot more mineralized organic phosphorus being made available to the plant. So there's justification for some of these. However, if you look at Indiana and Illinois and Wisconsin, boy, there's a big difference there, 65 to 120. Okay, same soil test, same crop. I mean, I know Illinois likes to beat Indiana by a couple bushels per acre every year, but that's an expensive way to get there. If we look at potassium, you look down at Nebraska, okay, more alytic soils, much higher supply capacity, maybe not reflected in the soil test, but there's a buffer there. Certainly makes sense. But again, when we start looking at the other regions, we have some values that are significantly greater. So that's for corn. So I also did it for soybean, 60 bushel per acre soybean, and we still have this same pretty broad difference in our recommendations. You know, look at North Dakota or South Dakota, Nebraska, 20 pounds of K2O per acre for that soybean crop. Illinois is 180, the tri-state region, 100. And Wisconsin's 85, Iowa's 90, Minnesota's down there at 20. And then with phosphorus, we also go from 5 pounds to 95 pounds. Okay, some of these you can explain. Some of these, I think, are a little bit more difficult to explain. So if you sum those all up, we can go from 35 to 215 pounds for a P recommendation and from 60 to 330 pounds for a K recommendation for a two-year crop cycle. Okay, it's a big difference. So I said, what if I'm farming 1,000 acres? Okay, well, now my price could be anywhere from $40,000 to $218,000. Okay, that's a really, really big difference. And I think that if we kind of look more in just kind of the central part here, the Illinois, Indiana, we've got over $100,000 difference over a two-year time period just by crossing the border from Illinois to Indiana. I'm not saying one's right and one's wrong. It's just that that's a big difference. And you cannot say that that's a difference based on our soils or our climate. They're not that different. So I think there would be some benefits to taking on a regional approach. We could start by defining some of our jargon. Okay, critical soil test level, or as it's in the glossary of soil science term, the critical soil test concentration, which is defined as the concentration that will achieve 95% of the maximum yield. Okay. However, Antonio would like to know at what confidence level. That is not part of the definition. Okay, that's a big, big issue. 95% out of how many years? We could develop sampling and analysis guidelines. We've kind of committed to do that in the NCR 13 committee. I think with a lot of Antonio's work on soil sampling and the different approaches that are out there, we need to come up with a little bit better guidance for what's going on. We could develop more flexible and maybe more risk-based approaches. Put the decision in the hands of the people that are spending the money. Okay. When we talk about risk, what do we mean by risk? There's agronomic risk, there's economic risk, there's environmental risk. And so I just kind of picked one of each. And so the agronomic risk, for example, could be the variability of soil test levels within a sampling unit. Okay. The economic risks are, what's the opportunity cost for the build component of the build-up and maintenance approach, depending on the soil test level that you're at, and what's your response? You know, could that money be invested in that enterprise somewhere else, or is it best spent there? And if we look at an environmental risk, you know, maybe when we have higher soil test levels, maybe we need to have enhanced soil conservation. I'm sure Jerry would like that. He kind of blew me away. I'm really not prepared to talk about everything that Jerry talked about. Number of cores per soil sample, okay, that uncertainty value. So I've stolen like four or five slides from Antonio, and I was just really glad that he didn't have any of them in his talk. So if we take 15 cores versus 10 cores, we have a difference of plus or minus 4 parts per million. Well, we all know there's a lot of grid sampling going on, and a lot of those grid samples, they're taking 8 cores. Now we're up to 5 parts per million. Okay, so why are we arguing whether the critical level is 15 or 20 when the soil sampling by itself is going to give us that? Okay, so I think that we need to be considering what the best approach would be. Recognizing uncertainty, 95% of maximum yield, okay? When Antonio says, okay, no doubts up here. All right, well, he's pretty right because all of these values are above 95% here for corn, but they're not all above 95% for soybeans. So that 95% of maximum yields, what percentage of the time? What's our comfort level? Okay, so those are things that I think we need to think about. And so this is kind of showing that in a different way. Again, using Iowa's soil test data, looking at soil test K, if we have 95%, that's in the high category. But look at the error bar associated with that. That does drop below 95%. So what's the critical level? Okay, when we talk about critical level, when Antonio says critical level, is it the same thing that Carrie Lebosky says when she's talking about critical level, or what I say, or what Sylvie, or Jim Camberato, or Dave Mangler, or anybody else? You know, we don't really have these terms very closely defined. Some economic things. Thanks again, Antonio. So here's looking at very low soil test levels where you have a high probability of crop response. Kind of regardless of what the price ratio of the nutrients are, you're probably going to make money by investing in that fertilizer. Okay, there are states, you know, several of the states in the Midwest have, fertilizer price to corn price ratios for nitrogen. Phosphorus and potassium price ratios to grain price ratios are starting to come into play. Okay, there's a couple states that are asking us to put that into our software now. When you're at the optimum soil test, okay, what is that price ratio? How much is the fertilizer cost? What's the value of the commodity that you're growing? Is it always worth that money to invest in that nutrient input? And it depends, right? So there's a lot of uncertainty. When we talk about environmental issues, our fertilizer recommendations in Indiana go to zero for our most demanding crops in our rotations, which would be wheat or alfalfa. And until you get to about 40 or 50 parts per million, soluble phosphorus is pretty darn low. Okay, it's not that our fertilizer recommendations when Stan Barber was developing fertilizer recommendations were designed to be environmentally sound. It's just that the plant said, I have all the phosphorus I need, and I quit responding. So that response is a pretty good indicator of kind of environmental susceptibility. And beyond that, as a component of a phosphorus index or other risk assessment procedure, then we need to start looking at how much is too much. You know, part of it's an environmental issue. Part of it is kind of a finite resource issue. It's a landfill mentality issue. You know, when are you banking versus just depositing? Okay. Build up maintenance and drawdown concept. Okay, so one of my issues in my own state is this maintenance range. Okay, we tell a farmer to build up their soil test to here, to the critical level, and when their soil tests get really high, we tell them to draw them down to the maintenance limit. And we have the same fertilizer recommendation all across this span. Okay, and so that's 15 soil test units in milligrams per kilogram long, so 15 to 30 for corn and soybean, 25 to 40 for wheat and alfalfa. I think a producer ought to be able to decide where they want to be. Okay, with some boundary conditions. You know, I mean, I think once you go beyond 40 or 50 parts per million, I just don't think that agronomically we can justify it. Okay. However, maybe I don't want to build up to 15. Maybe I want to build up to 25. Maybe I want to build up to 10 and just kind of keep on putting on a little bit more nutrients, you know, just whatever I need. Take the sufficiency level approach and say I'm going to maintain my soil test values lower, and I'm going to just have more regular inputs. Okay. I was just trying to find out where our fertilizer recommendations came from. Dave actually had a lot better data than I did. I wish we'd talk to him sooner. But I was just looking at some of Stan Barber's work, and basically if you look at our soil test critical level, although I think it was actually Michigan was in charge of the phosphorus fertilizer recommendations in the tri-state, but if we looked at our stuff, our corn yields, this is from 1984, we had a yield increase going from 10 to 20 parts per million and nothing beyond that. Okay, so our critical level is 15. Okay, that's one, you know, a lot of work that Stan did, but it's only one location. If you look at our wheat at a lower soil test level, we don't have as good of a yield of wheat, so we had a higher critical value there. One thing that's kind of interesting, though, is if our critical value is 25, this soil test is 29, but without regular inputs for a dozen years, wheat yield suffered. So part of the idea is that we are constantly going to be putting some inputs to kind of keep that system in flow. Okay, so we just don't have a one-way trip to reduced availability that may be picked up with our soil test, but maybe not available to the plants. So we have to kind of keep that stuff in mind. So kind of one way of thinking about a recommendation strategy, again, this is kind of the kind of quasi-build-up maintenance approach, is that the rate's going to depend on the initial soil test level, the years that you want to build to whatever your target soil test level is, and then market fluctuations. And that could change from year to year. So I did series of soil tests at 11 ppm. Producer wants to build it up to 25 parts per million. So the inputs would just be current soil test level, what your target is, what your build is, what your crop rotation yield goals are, and from that we can generate a fertilizer recommendation. Okay, with a four-year build-up time frame, that's 255 pounds of P2O5 every 2 years. If we wanted to take 8 years to do it, okay, then it's 185 pounds. Okay, well, 185, that's what, 70 pounds? Okay, 70 pounds times 40 cents a pound, $30 an acre. You know, that can be factored in. Maybe I only want to build it up to 20 parts per million. Okay, 4 years is 205, and a 8 year buildup would be 160. Let the producer decide what that target level is, and let's explain what the risks are of lower soil test levels versus higher soil test levels. Okay. Other benefits. We could take advantage of emerging technologies. Okay, this isn't just really soil testing, but we need to kind of take that next step. I'm not jumping into Jerry's boat quite yet, but Philip Owens in our department is developing functional soil maps. Antonio had some really good data showing that soil map units, as soil scientists, are splitters. We're looking for differences. But from a functional perspective, just because the map unit changed doesn't mean that the productivity potential changed. Let's look at the functional objective that we have. If it's to grow good crops, what are the chemical properties? What are the physical properties? What's the landscape position? Okay? Because the landscape position in concert with the climate is going to drive a lot of our moisture relationships. It's going to drive a lot of our nutrient availabilities. What cropping system are we working with? Okay? Those are things that we could take advantage of if we all pulled together from the same train. If we're going to do that, we're going to have to just face reality, and that is we're going to have to do this with software because the game's going to just become more complicated. You know, we might want to include price ratios. How about multi-year fertilizer recommendations? Okay, you know, that'd be a nice thing to have. User-defined soil test targets, variable build functions and time frames, budgets. How much money do you have to spend? Can we identify where the best place to put that money would be? So what's stopping us? Data, lack of data, right? I think Antonio has a lot. Maybe there's several other states that have some, but we don't get any money to do anything like this in Indiana. Resources to generate the data. We have lack of that too, okay? And those two go hand in hand. Unless we get funding to do this good work and this necessary work, it's going to be hard for us to move forward. But I think the biggest thing is our collective inability to compromise. Okay? And that goes back to the way we were trained and who trained us and whose fertilizer recommendations we worked on and how married we are to them. I think if we would kind of open up our eyes and say, does it really make sense that we have such a big difference as soon as we cross the state border? Can we compromise? That would really be a good first step. Okay, so with that, I'm going to stop. I'll give you something a little bit better than that to think about. But thank you for your time, and I'll answer any questions if there's any time left.
This time, any questions?
All righty.
Thank you.
Thank you.